If you recall, I had mentioned what the idea of the Yemosa Mashiach, what brings the Mashiach. Either it's a generation of Kulum Zakoim, all Jews are righteous, or Kulum Chayovim, all Jews are guilty, which means that Klai Yisrael insist on doing Averis, and therefore, after a while, it deteriorates until it becomes, of course, Kulum Chayovim. So therefore, but we know that the Rabbeinu Shalom wants to correct or masak in the Bria, and we know what the Chesmen is from all the Shurim before. So therefore, if the Jews act righteously, then they reveal or they testify to the unity of the Rabbeinu Shalom by their own actions. So the Rabbeinu Shalom says, since you testify to my unity, Shema Yisrael Hashem Lachin Hashem Echad, and mitzvahs and so on, therefore you yourselves bring or usher in the Mashiach. Therefore the Mashiach comes in direct response to their actions. Now, what happens, however, if the Yidden don't do that? The Yidden insist on doing chatoin, averis. So what happens? What the Rabbeinu Shalom then does is that the Jews have to do their work, because the Jewish nation is that nation which does the job which Adam Rishon was supposed to do, and that is bring the Rabbeinu Shalom back into the Bria, if you recall. And also, if you recall, I said there were three ways the Jews can bring the Rabbeinu Shalom back into the Bria. Either they do mitzvahs, one, they do tshuva, two, or three, they suffer yisurin, three. Those three methods, mitzvahs, tshuva, yisurin, is the way a Jew can bring the Rabbeinu Shalom back into the universe. How the Rabbeinu Shalom reveals his unity, Magal Yehuda in the Bria. So therefore, Kulam Zakoyim means that the Jews would bring the Rabbeinu Shalom back, would proclaim the Rabbeinu Shalom through the Bria by their righteous acts, either mitzvahs or tshuvas. Tshuva. However, since they don't do it that way, the Jews insist on doing chatoim. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Shalom will create, or rather, structure the design of the universe in such a way where he will be revealed not by the mitzvahs of the Jews, but by their yisurin, the sufferings that they go through. What is that? That's the golus. So therefore, the Rabbeinu Shalom arranges 2,000 years of golus for these Jews. And it's a 2,000 years of golus that is going to be masakin or correct all the evil and all the influence of the chatoim, the sins that the Jews have done. That will undo that. And that takes 2,000 years, what originally took a little over 200 years by Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you recall from last week. Now, what do we see now? So therefore, Kulam Chayov, which is what the Jews are in that state, that they are all guilty in that sense, that they are doing chatoim much more frequently than they are doing mitzvahs. Therefore, their way of bringing the Rabbeinu Shalom back into the Bria is through the avoda of Yisurin, Golos, 2,000 years, not through the avoda of mitzvahs. Now, the avoda of mitzvahs, of course, is together with the Yisurin, but the major way, of course, is through the Yisurin. Now, when the Jews continue doing chatoim, and they don't do the mitzvahs, so then how is the Yichud of the Rabbeinu Shalom going to be revealed to the universe? It's not going to be done through the mitzvahs of the Jews. And I mentioned this week, therefore, if you want to appreciate light, what you do is you take a person and put them into a dark room, and then all of a sudden you turn on the lights, and then he appreciates what light is. The way to appreciate the light, which means the way to appreciate who and what the Rabbeinu Shalom is, as the source of everything. So the Rabbeinu Shalom therefore makes the universe dark. Choshech. He allows evil to dominate. Not that the Rabbeinu Shalom makes people do evil, no. But if a person wants to do evil, he gives him success. He says, you want to do evil? I will allow you to do what you want to do. Not the Rabbeinu Shalom forces a person to do evil, because man still has free will. But until now, the Rabbeinu Shalom did not necessarily allow a person who wants to do evil to succeed. Now, however, since the Rabbeinu Shalom wants evil to succeed, because by evil succeeding and then being annulled in one instant of time, that will be the greatest revelation of who the Rabbeinu Shalom really is. Therefore, he allows people who want to do evil, he allows them to succeed. For instance, he allows the nations who want to make wars and destroy the world and so on, destroy people, destroy properties and so on, they succeed. He allows people who insist on feeling that they are somebody, let them make $1 million. I won't let them think that they're in control of everything. he allows atheistic religions, or rather polytheistic religions, to be successful. Because the more the world is going toward the absence of the true unity of God, the better it is for the Rabbeinu Shlom when he wants to reveal his true unity. Because only in a contrast will the world really understand who the Rabbeinu Shlom is. Therefore, the new concept which comes to mind, besides the concept of the suffering of the Jew, is what's called Tigburis Hara, the proliferation of evil. And that is here because by evil proliferating, by the Rabbeinu Shlom allowing evil to succeed, in the end, when he will end it all, in one instant of time, then you will realize who the Rabbeinu Shlom is and what he is. Because all the different areas that you thought you were somebody, all the different areas that man thought he had control, every area is immediately nisbatel. Immediately it becomes obvious that in every area you are nothing. And mankind merely had the illusion of its own power. It turns out that man was nothing, that the Rabbeinu Shlom is everything in every area. So therefore he allows man to develop in all the areas that he wants to develop, always on the illusion of man's arrogance. Therefore the concept of Tigbur Sara is also essential in Kulum Chayovim. So therefore two things happen. One is that the Jews will bring the Rabbeinu Shlom back in terms of their Yisurin, which is Golos, their sufferings, which is exile. And therefore it's their domination and persecution. This is all part of the exile. And the second thing that's included in the second way of bringing the Mashiach, of Kulum Chayovim, all are guilty, is the idea of Tigbur Sara, that evil will proliferate to such an extent, to such an incredible extent, where man thinks that he is everything, he dominates everything. And at that instant in time, the Rabbeinu Shlom walks into the universe and shows man his complete insignificance and nothingness. But he does it best at this point in time, because then man sees how insignificant he truly is. It's always better to bring the light after you've seen the darkness than to bring light without ever having seen darkness, because you don't appreciate it. It's always better to see the power of the Rabbeinu Shlom after you've tried all your powers. That's when you realize who he was and who you're not, rather than Rabbeinu Shlom showing you his power when you've never really made any attempts in that direction. So therefore Tigbur Sara is a fundamental idea that takes place while the Golos is taking place also. That the proliferation of evil, not that, again, the Rabbeinu Shlom makes people evil, but that he allows people who are evil, who want to testify to their own greatness, their own greed, narcissism, and so on, he allows them to be incredibly successful. So in the end, when they are vanquished, it will be with an incredible mapola, an overthrow. And that will show the world exactly who the Rabbeinu Shlom is. And that explains the reason why in the last 200 years mankind has been phenomenally successful in science, in industry, in terms of the wealth of the world. This is why it's happening. Because since we are close to the times of the Mashiach, this Tigbur Sara, this proliferation of evil, must also happen. Because the reversion presents as Yehudoi, it will be in contrast to the terrible illusion that man is under. So we understand a great deal of why history is making so many Rishoyim, so many evil people, successful. Why is it the Jew who is from is poor or whatever? Why is it that the Jews seem to be on the underhand and the Goyim seem to be growing mightier and mightier? That's why the Tigbur Sara. In fact, it says when Yaakov saw, originally Yaakov saw, he thought that from Dan would come the Mashiach. The Medrash says that Yaakov thought that Shimshon, Samson, would be the Mashiach. But then Benavua, this is when he was dying and he had the sons lined up in the end by Vayachi. So the Medrash says that he saw Shimshon died through prophecy, and he said, "Lishuascha kivisi Hashem," that Shimshon is not the Mashiach. We have to wait for the Yeshua of the Rabbeinu Shlom. But in any case, what he saw also was the statue of Esav growing mightier and mightier, until Esav, in terms of his symbolic form, was so awesome that Yaakov Avinu said, "Lishuascha kivisi Hashem," that the way it looks, that Esav will be so powerful. The evil will be so powerful before the Mashiach will come, so successful, that it almost looks impossible for a frumer Jew to function in that kind of a world. So he said, "Lishuascha kivisi Hashem," that only the Rebbeinu Shlom can save us out of that matzah, and therefore we await for his Yeshua. What he's saying, and it's also in the vision of Daniel, the great statue, for those who are familiar with Daniel and the different parts of that statue, that's how great Esav was. But you know why Esav is symbolized by America and the entire Western culture? Because Christianity is really what Esav is all about. Why is Esav so powerful? Because of Yisrael, because the Jews give him that power. Because when in the beginning, when Yaakov and Esav were vying for the brachas, Yitzchak told Yaakov that he will only be great when you are small, and he will be small when you are great. It's like a seesaw. Esav achieves his power because of your chatoim. Your sins give him the power to overcome you. So if Esav is so great, if American civilization and Western civilization is so great, that tells you the chatoim of the Yidden. Because he could never have achieved such greatness if the Yidden were doing mitzvahs. In any case, so the concept of Tikburus Ra is a necessity before the Mashiach comes, once the method of bringing the Mashiach will be Kulum Chayom, means that Jews are doing sins. And like this obviously has all come about because of the Holocaust and what ensued. This is what I'm talking about, the spiritual deterioration, the incredible. Now, what does that mean? Well, we begin to see that the fact that the Jews have been so decimated, what has it achieved? First thing, it has given tremendous tikburus hara to the goyim, Hitler and Germany and all the other nations that stood by while the Jews were being slaughtered. What the Rebbe Shlom has given them, again, because of the chatoim of Yidden, the success, the ability to dominate and persecute and actually destroy the Jews. That's where they got their yinuka. That's where they got their success from. So therefore, it puts the idea in the goy's mind that the Jews are nothing. And if the Jews are nothing, his God is nothing. You should know, every time a Jew dies by the hands of a goy, it's a murdered chil Hashem on the Rebbeinu Shlom. Because it shows that, because people know that Israel is the chosen in the sense that it is the nation that God chose to glorify his name. In that way, they are unique. Every time a Jew dies at the hands of a goy, it's a chil Hashem, because what it means is that God is nothing too. Like Titus. When Titus destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, right? What did he say? I have killed your Ummah and I have killed the Beis, I have killed you. That's what he thought. Of course, the Rebbeinu Shlom sent him a little gnat and so on in terms of what the story that happened. But essentially what Titus thought is that since he destroyed the Eden, in that sense, he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he thought he destroyed the God of Israel too, because that's a logical conclusion. Since God stands by his Jews and he says that you represent me on this earth, if you destroy the Jews, in effect, what it's really saying is you've destroyed God. So therefore, it's given the illusion to the goyim that they have destroyed the Rebbeinu Shlom, that the God of Israel is no more, or that he never was, or whatever. So that's one thing the Holocaust has given the goyim, which is again Tikburus Ra. It's furthered the illusion that they're under. The second thing is something which is very important. In order to, when we talk about Tikburus Ra, which means that evil must proliferate, bring out the unity of God, it also means not only that evil must proliferate, that Rishoyim have to be successful in their endeavors. There's another meaning behind it. It also means that those people who represent good must be destroyed. Because there's a chazal that says, Ma'at min ha'or, duch ahab min ha'choshech. When you go into a dark room and you walk in with a candle, that little candle disperses a tremendous amount of that darkness. That's the power of light. When one from a Yid is alive, that is very disturbing to evil. Because the Jew represents the awe, the light, the Ratzon of the Rebbeinu Shalom. One Godel in Klai Yisrael disturbs millions and millions of Goyim in terms of the success that they can have. That's the difference. One Jew connected the success of Goyim. Because a Jew represents a tremendous amount of Ruchnius. So in order to make sure that evil proliferates, you must destroy the Jews, because the Jews come along with their theory, their doctrine, that the Rebbeinu Shlom is the only one, and that you have to be frum and you have to do mitzvahs. The Jews are saying you have to be an oved of the God, you have to serve God. And the goyim are saying you have to serve man, man has to serve himself. So every time a Jew has a message to proclaim, it's very interrupting or disturbing to what the goyim want to do. So therefore, what the Holocaust did was by destroying a great deal of the Eden, half the population, and by destroying the leadership, what you've removed is the light. Therefore, darkness is much more. So the Rebbeinu Shlom has succeeded again in Tikburus Ra, not only by giving goyim their success, but by removing the impediment to evil succeeding, which is Torah, which is represented by the Jews. So therefore the Jews themselves must be destroyed in that way. Now, I am not saying that this was the intent why God destroyed the Jews. My analysis is, after the Holocaust, what do we as a nation look like? And this is what we look like. Now, undoubtedly, all this is part of the Cheshbonis, but the Rebbe Shem does not destroy Yidden, merely Tikber Sarah. There are many, obviously, infinite amount of Cheshbonis why the Rebbe Shem would do that to his own nation. I'm merely analyzing that after this happened, what did the Jewish nation look like? The tremendous spiritual deterioration is the first historical fact that we are faced with. Besides that, it has given the Goyim the illusion that the Jews are vulnerable, that the Jews are weak, and therefore their God is destroyed, which is Tikbur Sarah. In addition, what it also has done, it has destroyed the only oil or light in the Bria by decimating 6 million Jews, and those kind of Jews. What that has given the Goyim is tremendous strength in putting out Torah and what the truth is all about, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is supreme and not Goyim or science or whatever. So therefore, meet or the repercussion of the Holocaust is that there's now fewer Jews to talk up or scream or fight connected what's happening in the Bria. That enables again Tikbur Sarah, the proliferation of evil, to succeed. Besides all this is their tremendous hester. Obviously, the greatest hester of the Ribbono Shel Olam has come while 6 million Jews were being destroyed. Because then where is God? It gives everybody a chance to think that where is the Ribbono Shel Olam? What happened? How did the Ribbono Shel Olam allow this to happen? But the truth is that that hester, which the Ribbono Shel Olam is clothed in, namely the fact that his people are being destroyed in such a cruel way, is a Mishunidic hester, which in certain effects were caused by the Chatoim of the Yidden. It doesn't happen unless a Jew does a chet, which one understands from all the different shurim before. So therefore, the amount of hest of the Ribbono Shel Olam is awesome during the Holocaust. And that's all part, again, of the matzav that Yidden have created, and also as part of the einish of what they receive as a result of the chatoim for the thousands of years or whatever. So therefore, we see therefore that the Holocaust, and with it America and Israel and so on, which has incredibly deteriorated the Jewish nation spiritually, also has given a tremendous proliferation of evil. It has destroyed the light, the amount of Jews, therefore now evil can even more proliferate. And also that there's been a tremendous amount of hester. Now, it's interesting to think that the Holocaust has tremendous amount of parallels with also Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim, what happened? Paro decided, what was his fear? Paro's fear was the fact that, well, if the Jews multiply, what's going to happen? They're going to take over Egypt. They're going to become the masses, and we will become the slaves. So what does Paro decide to do? Paro decides to destroy the firstborn of every Jew in order to make sure that the Mashiach is not born. Now, the Ribbono Shel Olam had his cheshbon, because while the attributes of justice were saying that the Jews deserve death or whatever, and they would not have died unless the attribute of justice was not right, the Ribbono Shel Olam was busy bringing the Mashiach, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was born at the very time when Jews were being killed. Because in a sense that the Sitra Achro, the Eitzahar, whatever you want to call him, he's busy prosecuting Israel, and he's attending to that, and meanwhile the Ribbono Shel Olam brings the Mashiach right under his nose. The very person who's going to take out Klai Yisrael from Egypt is born at the very time that Paro is killing Jews, which means that the attribute of justice is winning, because that's what it means. When that many Jews are dying by Paro, it means that Midas Hadin is winning, or else they wouldn't die. So the very time that the attribute of justice is winning, therefore the Jews are dying as a result of that, the firstborn, the Ribbono Shel Olam is busy bringing the Mashiach. And he did. He brought him right under the Sutton's nose. And he was born at the very same time. And not only that, but the Mashiach, who was Moshe Rabbeinu, is brought up in the palace itself of the individual who wants to destroy. That's the way Rosh always does those kind of things. That's the way Hester works. Perhaps one could even look at World War II that way. that while din was being done, which is, it's midas ha-din, while the attribute of justice was winning in that sense, and Jews were dying in that sense, who knows if the Ribbono Shel Olam wasn't making sure that the midas ha-din, the sitra achra, was busy destroying the Jews, and at that very time he was busy bringing in the Mashiach. Who knows if that's not true? Because it's very similar. Because if you remember, even Hitler's cheshbon was that. He was afraid Jews are going to take over the world. This whole world conspiracy kind of idea. The same idea as Paro, that Jews are going to take over the world. Hitler had the same idea, therefore let's destroy the Jews. So who knows if at that time, perhaps a Mashiach was busy being born even at that time, in the Holocaust itself. There's also one more idea, which we see that happened by Yetzias Mitzrayim. When the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to be Goel Yisrael, okay, many times the Ribbono Shel Olam, when he wants to redeem Klal Yisrael, and the time is not up, so what the Ribbono Shel Olam does is Mamahed Yisurin. He compresses the amount of suffering that Klal Yisrael goes through in a shorter amount of time, so they can be redeemed earlier. Okay, that's what he does. The idea of a Holocaust happening, okay, provides the Yidden with a tremendous amount of Yisurin in a very short amount of time. It is my feeling that what is basically happening is this, in terms of an explanation, which we come down to, of why the Holocaust occurred, in terms of a messianic idea, is this. The Mashiach must come before the year 6000, and he has to rule for a certain amount of time. Because remember, the Messianic age, or the Yemos HaMashiach, is a time period in Olam HaZeh, this world, not the next world. It's a utopian age where everybody will worship the Ribbono Shel Olam in this world. Therefore, the Mashiach must come before the world is destroyed, which happens in the year 6000, and he has to reign for many years. Now, in order for him to come, however, the Jews have to reach a certain stage of spiritual deterioration. But at the rate it's going, it's going to take another 200 years to come. So therefore, what does the Ribbono Shel Olam do? Now, we begin, remember the ideas I brought up? Why do we see such a spiritual deterioration in such a short amount of history, span time of 60 years? The Yidden have to reach a certain level of spiritual deterioration before the Mashiach arrives. Because Jews have to be gone, and then there's a greater proliferation of evil. All these cheshbonos must happen for the Mashiach to come at the right time. But if we wait for history to do its time, so it's going to take another 250 years, right, for the Jews to reach the same level of spirituality that we have today. So what's left for the Mashiach? Only 8 years. It would seem, I mean, he's only going to reign for 8 years and then the universe is destroyed. It would seem that the Rebbe does not want the Mashiach to reign 8 years or 30 years or some small amount of time, especially when the world has gone through almost 6,000 years of darkness, that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to bring the Yidden to a very low level immediately. So that will begin the Aschata de Gula much quicker. But how does he do that? How does he do it? He's got to speed it up, right? Because if you look at the normal deterioration process, again, it takes hundreds of years to go from 1882 to 1982. So what does the Ribbono Shel Olam do? Now again, I'm not saying this is the only reason, but from what comes out of it, one can see that this is part of the cheshbon. A Holocaust provides tremendous concentrated yisurin in a short amount of time, which is what obviously there's more golos that the Yidden have to go through in order to bring the Mashiach. So the Ribbono Shel Olam concentrates it in 6 years, number one. Number two, the second thing he accomplishes, so the first thing is tremendous tikkun. Instead of having hundreds more years of golos, he can now do it in a much shorter span of time by doing it in six. The second thing which happens is that the spirituality of the nation is reduced hundreds of times in a short amount of time. Again, to bring them to the point of Yemos HaMashiach and to bring Ra to a much higher extent immediately in a short span of 60 years. So it comes out that as a result of the Holocaust, the Yidden are now standing at a very low spiritual level, perhaps just the right spiritual level of the advent of the Mashiach. The evil has proliferated to a far greater extent than it would have in normal historical sequence, so that has been accomplished also. And also what's been accomplished is that any further golos that the Eden have to go has all been ischaper, atoned, in those 6 devastating years of the Eden dying at the hands of Amalek, which is Germany. Okay? These are the different things going on at that time. Now again, I'm not saying that I'm giving the answer for what happened, because the truth is nobody can. But merely from a Hashkafa standpoint, we can see some kind of sense in it. In the sense that the Rebbeinu Shem wants to speed up the coming of the Mashiach and not wait for only 10 years that he should rule. So therefore, he wants to speed that up, number one. So therefore, the Jews must be at a certain level of spirituality for that to happen. He wants to make sure that evil is more proliferated because it needs a certain amount before the Rebbeinu Shem reveals himself. So that also comes about. So the Eden, of course, the spiritual level goes down because of the war. 6 million, the spiritual level goes down because of 6 million Eden. In addition, the quality, the cream of Eden, and the leadership is all devastated. So now the Eden are standing at an incredibly low level of spirituality, which would have taken hundreds of years to reach. The Rebbeinu Shem does it in 6 or 7 years. He also, what he also does is, besides bringing the Jews to a low spiritual level, he proliferates evil to an incredible extent, far more than would have been possible, because now, remember, when you remove a Jew, evil can proliferate more, because the light always obstructs darkness. And the third thing is that there's a tremendous amount of tikkun for the Eden, because instead of having the suffering of Jews go through hundreds more years in Golos, it happens in 6 years. Okay, we see the same thing in Mitzrayim, where when Moshe Rabbeinu came, if you recall, he came to Egypt, and he was about to redeem the Jews, and then Paro says, well, who are you? You're all people, all of you are lazy. So before you now, you were building the fortresses. Now you've got to make your own bricks. You remember that at the end of Shemos? So Moshe Rabbeinu comes running back to Rabbeinu Shem and says to him, what did you send me for? Instead of me doing good for them, taking them out, it's gotten worse. The Paro has made it much harder for the Jews now. The Assyrian is much greater. Okay, so the Rebbeinu Shem said, now you will see, I'll take them out. But the truth is, what the Rebbeinu Shem was doing is he was being mamahe the gula, that when Moshe Rabbeinu came, they still had to be many years in Egypt. The amount of suffering had not reached its point. So Rebbeinu Shem speeded it up. He concentrated the amount of Yisroel in a couple of months' time. So Moshe Rabbeinu did not understand that, of course. And that was considered a chet to Moshe Rabbeinu, that he didn't understand, he didn't believe that what the Rebbeinu Shem is doing is correct. You cannot maharach midosav. But the idea is that the Rebbeinu Shem was speeding up the redemption so Moshe Rabbeinu could take them out quicker, in a couple of months, which perhaps would have taken years to yet further undergo. It's the same idea, that it looks like the Rebbeinu Shem is speeding up the process of redemption to bring the Yidden to a very low spiritual level, to give the goyim much greater hatzlacha, and at the same time to reduce the amount of years the Yidden have to be in Golos by this short amount of 6 years, which of course is incredible. That is one understanding, mitoich hashkofa, of the different phenomena happening as a result of the Holocaust. Now, there is one other interesting phenomenon which results, which again has to be understood. It's interesting to note that the world never was able to destroy itself by its own means until the war came. The world can make only conventional war. But all of a sudden, Einstein comes along, right, and he discovers the secret of atomic fission, E=mc², right? And then you have people who discover the atom bomb and then the H-bomb, right? The world now has the wherewithal to destroy itself, which it never had. The world can actually, ayidei teva, through normal natural means, destroy itself. It could never do so before. Not only that, but the individuals who gave the instrument of destruction happened to be 3 Jews. Einstein, who gave the theory, Oppenheimer, who was the father of the A-bomb, and Teller, who was the father of the H-bomb. All 3 Jews. Also interestingly enough, that at the same time that the world is realizing its ability to destroy the world by coming in contact with atomic fission and so on, nuclear devices, it's also developing what's called the missiles, the delivery system. The missiles developed at the same time as atomic physics, very interestingly enough. So now not only does the world have the ability to destroy itself, it now has the delivery system also. It's got all the ICBMs that can do the job. What does that mean, Ayidi Hashkofa? The fact that all this comes at the time of World War II, the fact that the delivery system comes at the same time as the wherewithal, the instrument that the world can destroy itself. What does all this mean? Interestingly enough, if the world can destroy itself, it means only one thing. It means the world is nidun misa, that the world is judged, that it is chayiv misa. Notice, the truth is that the way the chatoim are stacking themselves up, the world really should annihilate itself. When mankind is given the ability to destroy himself, that is a klola, a curse, not a blessing. It's a curse, especially when you have so many maniacs at the head of governments who can do the job. And it's a nest that they don't destroy the world. And that's only because the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't allow them to destroy the world. Believe me, not because of man's goodness and gentleness. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam does not allow Russia or any of the countries, Iraq or whatever, to destroy the world. So therefore, the fact that the world has the wherewithal to destroy itself and the delivery system means that the world is chayiv misa. That's how far the world has come in terms of what it deserves. And of course, the ones who have brought the world to the chayiv misa, of course, are the Jews. Because it's the chatoim of the Yidden. It's those people who can influence the Hester and Ha'orah, if you remember the whole ideas of Tzimtzum. Those people can destroy the world. And the reason why people could destroy the world by Noach's time, because there was no such thing as a Jew. Everybody could influence the amount of concealment or presence that God had in the universe. And it was only by Avram that it was given only to the Jews and taken away from the Goyim. And if they want to become Jews, they can become individually, but no more as a nation. So therefore, anybody who has the power to direct the amount of presence or concealment of God's presence in the Bria is the one who could destroy the universe. So therefore, the Yidden who can destroy the universe by the Chatoim, unfortunately have brought the universe to that Madrega of Chiyuv Misa. And of course, the Holocaust happening at the same time was, in a sense, Misa for the Yidden. And since the Jews have more or less brought the world by the Chatoim to that state, the people who would give the instrument must be Jews. Einstein, Oppenheimer, and Teller. Since the Yidden are the ones who have put the world into that matzav, unfortunately, so therefore they themselves will bring the instrument of destruction that the world can use to destroy itself. And the Holocaust, which was happening at the same time that the A-bomb was discovered and the delivery system, of course, was in the process of destroying the Jews. So all this is going on historically, not by accident, but there are incredible historical or hashkofa repercussions. We begin to see that history is not just the discussion of, well, the economic principles of war or whatever. History goes through the principles of hashkofa and nothing else. The Yidden are the ones who determine history and nobody else. They can put the course of mankind to bring the universe in a state of toiv, goodness, where everything is very good, or they can bring the universe into a state of destruction. But in any case, Din was Niskayim during the Holocaust. The Yidden were dying. Their Uma was dying. Because the world was needing the Misa, they gave the instrument to the world. The delivery system is at the same time. And at the same time, the world can now destroy itself. In addition, the Yidden were now going to a spiritual low, just right for the Mashiach. There was a concentrated amount of Yisurin, which means that the Yidden do not have to go into Golus. And who knows if the Mashiach also isn't being born around that time. All these things are happening while the war is going on and nobody's aware of it. Everybody thinks it's a matter of nations fighting nations. It's not. It's a spiritual universe that determines the entire physical history of mankind. This is what's happening during World War II. So therefore, we begin to see that sort of like you look at a clock. You look at a clock and you see two hands going around a simple face. Okay? You see a clock, and it looks like two hands are going around a face. So you think it must be a very simple mechanism. You take the clock off, and all of a sudden you look in it, and you see this incredibly complex mechanism of gears. In other words, you realize that the simple motion of two hands around the clock is determined by a tremendous mechanism, an internal structure, very complex and very exact. The same thing with the universe and history. History looks like it's very simple. This war is caused because that guy started one thing because the allies in Japan. It looks all very simple. But the truth is, it's completely irrelevant to what goes on in this Bria. History is determined by the mitzvot and chatoim of Eden. And it's also determined by what has to be done in this universe before the Ribbono Shel Olam is nizgala again. That's what makes history. And what I'm trying to point out in terms of discussing the entire historical antecedents of the Mashiach is by taking a look at the war holocaust and looking at it as something which does many, many different things. That it's not a simple war, that many things result, and we're going to only a couple of them. And I'm sure there's an infinite amount of cheshbonos that the Ribbono Shel Olam has. But in terms of the Yemei Shel Mashiach that we begin seeing happening, is that Klai Yisrael, the world, everything is being brought into readiness for the exact stage of Aschalta Degula that the Mashiach has to arrive in. And that is accomplished in one sweep by this war, which does all these things at the same time. It brings Klai Yisrael to a low level. It concentrates the tremendous amount of Yisun at one time, so further Golos is not needed. It brings Tigbur Sarah, proliferation of evil, much greater. It does many of these things. It shows the world is Chayav Misa with the atom bomb and so on. So therefore, what I'm trying to give you in this year is an appreciation of what does it mean to analyze history in terms of Hashkofa. Not look at it just simply in terms of studying World War II or World War I or whatever. That all history has incredible repercussions that emanate in terms of the Jews and the tikkun of the Eden, the correction that the Eden have to undergo, that's what determines history. It says that the Mashiach awaits in every generation. Chazal say that somebody once said that the Mashiach is standing by Rome, so he said, where is he? So he pointed him out, so he said, when are you coming? Memesai Kosima, when are you coming? So he said, I'm coming today. Today? If the Jews do tshuva today, I come today. What we see is the Mashiach saying is very simply that even if the Ribbono Shel Olam has decided to send the Mashiach in Kulum Chayovim, meaning that Jews now bring the Mashiach through their suffering, not through the mitzvahs, and that there has to be a proliferation of evil in order to megala the yichud of the Ribbono Shel Olam, it still means that if the Jews do tshuva, the Mashiach will come instantly. In other words, Kulum Zakoim is never done away with. At every point in history, every time, if the Jews all do tshuva, and they observe, let's say, one Shabbos or whatever, then the Mashiach comes as a result of their mitzvahs, and everything else is suspended. Kulum Zakoim is always there, but while Kulum Zakoim is not being fulfilled, therefore the Mashiach will come through Kulum Chayovim. But the main idea is that the Yidden can do mitzvahs and bring the Mashiach now, and immediately do away with all the other way of bringing the Mashiach, which is Kulum Chayovim. So the Yidden can bring the Mashiach instantly if all the Yidden do mitzvahs. And which is something which I want to point out, which is very important. Not that Kulum Chayovim, the only way it can come is if Jews suffer and so on. It's not true. That Kulum Zakoim is always operative. But as long as it's not working in the sense that Jews are not taking advantage of that, the other part is being set in motion. And I want to bring you just an interesting historical riot for that. People think that Hitler, for instance, Yimach Shemoy, Hitler had tremendous control of Germany, right? And that there was no way to stop him. The truth is that, forget about the fact that you could stop him from the Allies. Hitler could have been stopped by his own people. Do you know how? If somebody reads German history during the war, you'll notice that there was always a confrontation between Hitler and his generals, Rommel and so on. There was always this fight between the generals and Hitler because they thought he was crazy, his incredible, absurd military decisions he was making. So had the Yidden done tshuva in whatever sense, then Hitler could have been overthrown internally by his own generals. In other words, there's no such a thing that when Klai Yisrael finds itself in the middle of a tzara, that's it. There's nothing they can do. Klai Yisrael can get out of every tzara if it's suffering, even in the middle of that suffering, because Kulum Zakoim is always operative, that can always take over. It's like a railroad track, you know. Meanwhile, we're going this way, but at any point, the train could immediately shunt in another direction. At every point, the same idea. Even during World War II, when the Holocaust was going on, had Yidden done tshuva, then that whole other way of being in the tikkun, to the Yisurim, the death of Jews, and so on, that all could have been avoided And even Hitler could have been overthrown internally by his own men. So therefore, Kulam Zakoim is always operative if the Yidden do tshuva. It's unfortunate that the Yidden do not take advantage of that time. So therefore, Kulam Chayom, the idea of Jews constantly spiritually deteriorating, the idea of the proliferation of evil always going forward, this keeps going forward because the Yidden are not taking advantage of the other way to bring Mashiach. And bringing Mashiach is nothing more than ushering in that utopian age where the Rebbeinu Shlom will be seen as the true Sheirish root of the entire Bria. That's what it's all about. So therefore, what I hope to do in this entire Shiur is to analyze, in terms of a summary, is to analyze what does it mean when we understand history in terms of Hashkofa, not in terms of the way you look at it in terms of history textbooks, that we begin to see that Odom Rishon, he was the first attempt to be Megal, the Yichur of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, the Bria. He failed from the Chet. The next attempt was the peoples after Odom Rishon, but they did such a bad job that they had to be destroyed, and Noach was the only one left. And again the Rebbeinu Shel Olam waited until Avram. He makes a covenant with Avram by Bris Ben Absurm, and he says that you will be doing the job that will be Megal Yehudi Be'olam. You will reveal. And then Avram has Yaakov, and the third generation now, that tradition that they accepted to Megal Yehudi is implanted, and therefore Yaakov is called Yisrael. And therefore, immediately what happens? They go into Egypt, into exile. Why? Because the exile of the Jews in Egypt was supposed to undo the evil that Adam had given into the Bria. And after the Egypt was over, all of a sudden they're about to makabel the Torah, which means Moshe Rabbeinu then would have become the Mashiach, and that would have ushered in the Messianic Age, that we see from Chazal. Instead they go and do the Egel, so it restores the original Chet, and Yidden have to go back into the Avodah, because the whole thing, of course, falls away. So the second attempt, Yetzias Mitzrayim, again is unsuccessful. So the Rebbeinu Shlom waits for 2,000 years, or rather 1,300 years, for the Yidden to bring the Mashiach through the Nevi'im and the Tanoim and the Amroim, the whole Tekufa. And he waits that they should bring the Mashiach through Kulam Zakoim. However, it doesn't happen. So therefore, for the next 2,000 years, the Yidden have to bring the Mashiach or usher in the Shechina, the Gilu of the Rebbeinu Shlom and the Bria, through their own Golos. They have to do the avodah through Yisurim, which is Golos, and not through Zakoim. But the idea of bringing the Mashiach of Zakoim is always operative. But unfortunately, the mechanism that Golos will now bring the Mashiach is now operative, after the Churban by Hasheni. And for 2,000 years, Jews are being persecuted and being dominated on one side, and that Yisurim is bringing or taking away all the amount of the Chatoim of the Eden. And at the same time, the Rebbeinu Shlom is going to be in his gala because of Tikburis Arah, which is proliferation of evil. And as it gets worse and worse until we come to about 100 years before, when all of a sudden the Rebbeinu Shlom gives an incredible impetus of Tikburis Arah, and that was done by science and industry, where man now had the illusion of incredible grandiosity, because he now can explain the universe besides through physical principles, not the Rebbeinu Shlom. So he now removes the Rebbeinu Shlom, and of course, going with that, of course, is the fact of atheism growing, because science displaces God, therefore atheism grows. And in addition, industry gives man incredible command and control over the physical forces of this Bria. So man thinks that he controls everything, that he is a God also. And therefore, that's the beginning of the Tikburis Arah, and it finally enters into down and down into Klal Yisrael, where the Tikburis Arah, in order to usher in the Messianic period much quicker, the Holocaust happens, that does a many, many amount of things that set the stage for the Mashiach, and as Mechaper Klal Yisrael, gives the nation even more illusion of grandiosity and slowly brings in the Messianic period. This is what I want to present, and just to give you a feel of understanding history through the eyes of Hashkofa. Now next week, I'm going to be going into, now that we understand the historical antecedents of the Mashiach, I'm going to be going into how is the Mashiach going to reverse or bring the Geula to Klal Yisrael. How is he going to do it? What is his derech? How is he going to bring the Rebbeinu Shlom back into the Bria? The entire method of the Mashiach And after that, which is very important, how do we see the forerunner of this method in history? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam is Mechen, the Bria. He, before the Mashiach comes, he puts into history different events which precede the Mashiach in terms of his methodology. And that's what I'll be going into next week and the week after. What I'm going to be doing in this year, and probably the next, is discussing the derech, or the method, of the Mashiach. In other words, what is the instrument? How will the Mashiach be doing what he has to do? How is he going to accomplish this? And where do we see this in Chazal? The second part of this particular shiur on the Mashiach is where do we see the historical antecedents of this method in history? What the Ribbono Shel Olam has done is he has been mechen, he has prepared the Bria, mankind, for the derech of the Mashiach. That's part of what's going on in history. Where do we see it? How do we see it? I just want to mention that last week certain questions were raised, and I feel it's an important question and I want to answer it. We know from last week that the entire idea of why there's a tremendous proliferation of evil is because since the Jews are doing chatoim, therefore they are not being masig, the yichud of the Ribbono Shel Olam, from their own work. So the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to give them that hasoga. Since the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to give them that hasoga, so obviously if he's going to teach them something, it's going to be in the best possible way. And the best possible way is if you want to teach about light, the benefits of light, then you introduce an individual to its contrast, a dark room. And then you introduce light. If the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to teach Klal Yisrael and the Bria, all of mankind, about his Yichudai, then the best possible way is to introduce the opposite, or its contrast, which is Tikburis Hora, the proliferation of evil and giving it to success. So therefore mankind is under the illusion of a multiplicity of many different forces and beings and so on. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam will introduce himself at one instant in time, and that is the best way mankind will be masik the Yichud of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is what we had just talked about last week. Now, somebody had asked, if that's the case, then maybe Jews should be doing evil, because since the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to give Hasagas Yichudai, he wants to give the Jews the Hasaga of his Yichud, and since the best way to be Masig his Yichud is through evil, in that sense, then maybe Jews should not be doing mitzvahs. Now, I mention that because other people had asked me that also, and I see it could be a fallacy in people's minds, so therefore I want to answer that. And that is that there are basically three answers to that question. It is really a fallacy in thinking. The first idea is the first answer is that whatever the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, that's what he wants. And it's not for us to understand or go into exactly how he runs the universe. There's a lashon in Chazal that says, "Bahadi kifshi derachmono lo malach." What do you have to do with the secrets of the Ribbono Shel Olam? The Ribbono Shel Olam wants Jews to listen to his commandments, to do the mitzvahs, to do tshuva. That's what he wants. And he wants it to go on all the time and every place, and no matter what situation. We cannot sit in cheshbon, well, if the Ribbono Shel Olam is making evil be more successful, so we can be masig yichudei when he does reveal himself, so therefore we should be doing evil. His expressed rotzen is not that we should be doing evil, that we should be doing his mitzvahs. So the first answer is that's gzeiras melech. What the Ribbono Shel Olam wants is Jews to do mitzvahs and tshuva. He does not want people to do averis or chatoim, period. What the Ribbono Shel Olam is doing in his timetable or from his frame of reference is his business. We cannot second guess the Ribbono Shel Olam and therefore start doing chatoim. There was somebody who made that second guess in history, named Shabtai Tzvi, and we all know the direction that he took as a result of that. And we'll understand what the mistake that Shabtai Tzvi made when we talk about the personality of the Mashiach. But in any case, the essential idea is we cannot second guess or outsmart the Ribbono Shel Olam. He wants mitzvahs, and that's exactly what we have to do. Period. It doesn't concern us in terms of doing mitzvahs or not doing mitzvahs, in terms of what the Ribbono Shel Olam is doing with his Bria. That's the first answer, and that is really the only answer. That's it. The second answer, in terms of going into more rationale or svara, is that when people will realize the unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam as a result of the proliferation of evil, that is not reward. That Gil Yechudoy, that revelation of the unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam to mankind, is a gift to mankind. That is not based on any efforts that they did. In other words, if you have evil people who are going to be Masig Yechudoy, they're not being Masig Yechudoy because of any merit that they did. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants, and that's his plan for the Bria, to be Megale his Yichud, even to Rishoyim, okay, for whatever reason he wants that. Their comprehension of those ideas or attributes of the Ribbono Shel Olam is not a reward that they get, it's a gift that they get. The reward that people get is in Olam Haba. In order to be Masig the Yichud of the Ribbono Shel Olam in Olam Haba, which is infinitely greater than the amount of knowledge we will have about the Ribbono Shel Olam in this world, even in Yemos HaMashiach, do not confuse the two. The amount of reward or Hasoga of the Ribbono Shel Olam is infinitely greater in Olam Haba than the amount of Hasoga about the Ribbono Shel Olam that we experience in Yemos HaMashiach. That Hasoga is only due to your Hasoga itself. How much work did you do to be Masig the Ribbono Shel Olam? That's the amount of Hasoga you will have in Olam Haba. The Hasoga that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives in the Yemos HaMashiach is a gift to mankind, not as a result of their acts. So in other words, it comes out that if a person does evil and he's Masig Yechudoy, he will be missing the Hasogas Yechudoy of Olam Haba, because that only comes in response to his work here to try to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the amount that a person comprehends of the revelation of his unity in Olam Hazeh, in Yemos HaMashiach, in this world, is merely a gift of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore, doing evil does not get you the Hasogas Yechudoy in Olam Haba. And the Hasogas Yechudoy you get in Olam Hazeh is only as a gift of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore, if a person wants to do averus, he will not be Masig Yechudoy in Olam Haba, merely in Olam Hazeh. In terms of a second answer, is that for a person to do averus, sins, okay, and not to do mitzvahs, and if the person thinks that he will therefore understand the unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam better, is a mistake. Because the unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam that he will understand in the Yemos HaMashiach, in the Messianic times, is only a gift of the Ribbono Shel Olam to mankind. The unity that a person is supposed to understand in Olam Haba only comes in response to the amount of work that he did in getting to that Hasoga. So therefore, we must do mitzvahs to understand that unity, that Hasoga Yehudah, comprehension on his unity in Olam Haba, and there is no other way to get it. The only way you could masik or comprehend his unity or attributes of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the future world, Olam Haba, is through Avodah. No other way. And the third answer that one can offer is that at the time of the Mashiach, or right before the Mashiach, one has to know, if one wants to know how great will be the test of man, the nisoyim, the tribulations of a man, and how great will that reward be as a result, the Rabbi Yisrael Mirvision, who was a very famous Hasidish Rebbe, says that before the advent of the Mashiach, evil will be so great, it will be so difficult to understand the true direction. What is the emes, the truth, and what is sheker, falsehood? That the nisoyen, the temptation to man, will be greater than the Akedah Yitzchak, greater than the binding of Isaac that occurred with Avram. And we all know how great that test was to Avram, because we're still praying to the Ribbono Shel Olam to give us reward for the test that occurred almost 4,000 years ago. So Rabbi Yisrael Mirvision says that in the time of the Mashiach, right before, it will be so the difficulty of the temptation will be greater than the Akedah Yitzchak, and the reward obviously will be greater. That's how great it is to withstand falling at the time of the Mashiach. Therefore, what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants is that he wants every Jew to try to withstand falling. Even contrary, not only is there a hester or a concealment of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but even though you see tremendous successes of evil, all kinds of shtusim, ridiculousness and absurdities being successful, He wants you to withstand that. And as a result, the reward you get is much greater. It's much greater than the reward you would have gotten had you lived in a righteous generation. Okay? And not only that, you yourself, by suffering or by being at a poor situation, will help the Rabbeinu Shlolem, okay, reveal his greatness. Now how? And there again you see the mitzvahs. When a friar yid, let's say, or a goy, takes a look at a frumah Jew, a religious Jew, and he sees that he suffers, right? And that, so he asks himself, if righteousness is the correct path, then why is he suffering? Therefore, what's the conclusion? That righteousness is not the correct path. So it comes out that by that Jew being righteous and not being rewarded, the evil is even more proliferated. But it comes out that you proliferate evil by being righteous and not being in a successful situation. Just the contrary of what people think. In other words, which is part of the idea which I talked about the Holocaust. By the fact that the Jews are in such a low madrega level of spirituality, and the fact that from Eden, religious Jews are not matzliach, right? It gives the chance for people to see that on the contrary, righteousness is not the right pursuit, is not the right direction. The best pursuit is to do whatever I want. So it comes out that this Jew, besides earning reward because he's righteous and he does mitzvahs, he's earning even more reward because the goyim look at him and laugh at the religious Jew and they think that it's not the way to go. So it comes out that evil is even more proliferated, which means that the comprehension of the Rabbeinu Shlom, when he reveals it, will be even greater. So it comes out that the religious Jew himself, by being righteous, is contributing to the proliferation of evil. So he gets a double reward. One is that he is righteous, and number two, that his righteousness, the fact that he is not successful, is interpreted by evildoers as the fall of righteousness. So therefore, more ra, more evil is proliferated, because they then go about doing even more evil, so that the Yehuda, the unity of the Rabbeinu Shlom, which will be revealed by the Mashiach, will be even greater, because I said that the more evil there is, the greater is to understand the unity of God. Because man, in every area that man thinks he's something, he realizes that in all those areas he's nothing. And the more areas that he has to realize he's nothing, the greater is the understanding of how much of a nothing he is. So it comes out that a Jew, by doing righteous acts, and therefore not being in a good situation, actually contributes to the eventual Gil Yehudai of the Rabbeinu Shlom. So on the contrary, we see that the task of a Jew is to do mitzvahs. So the Gil Yehudai of the Rabbeinu Shlom, the revelation of his unity, will be even more revealed in the Mashiach's times. So that's the third answer. In other words, what the Rabbeinu Shlom wants is what it says in Habakkuk. Tzadik be'emunoso yichye, a righteous man will live by his faith. And what he was saying is that there will come a time that a righteous man will not have nevuah, prophecy. He will not have ruach hakodesh, divine inspiration. He won't have any simonim or signs that God is present. He'll have nothing. Even he will have to live on his faith. Even he will have to remain steadfast in his faith, contrary to all the opposites happening around him. And that, when a tzaddik remains steadfast in his faith, even if he's not in a good situation, not only does he get the reward for his mitzvahs, but he contributes to the eventual revelation of the unity of the Rabbeinu Shlom, because evil proliferates more by him being a tzaddik and not being successful. On the contrary. So these are basically the three answers of why, even though the Rabbeinu Shlom is going to enable the Bria to be Masig his Yichud, to comprehend his unity, it still means that every Jew must do the mitzvahs and tshuva. Not Chas v'Shalom to do any averes. If you recall, I told you that God conducts himself in two hanhogas, two principles of conduct. One is called hanhogas ha-mishpat, the attribute or the conduct of justice. The other is called hanhogas ha-yichud, the conduct of his supreme being. What does that mean? I mentioned then that in one area, God behaves toward men with justice. If you are evil, you get punished. If you are righteous, you get rewarded. So that has been going on through most of mankind's history. That if a Jew wanted to do a mitzvah, he was successful in doing mitzvahs. He was not punished, basically. He was allowed to become a tzaddik and a holy man, a kodesh, right? As time goes on, the Ribbono Shel Olam reverts or changes to what's called Hanhogas Yichud. Primarily, Hanhogas Yichud means the attribute where he acts in accordance with the conduct of supremacy, which I'll explain, has been going on underneath. It means it's a hidden method of conduct. However, before the Mashiach comes, it's open. What's Hanhogas Yichud? It means that the Ribbono Shel Olam does not regard righteousness or evil, period, in terms of reward or punishment. He will reward people who are completely evil, that's what it looks like, yeah. And he will punish people who are completely righteous. There is no regard to a man's action. And the tzaddik can scream all day, he can be mispalel, pray all day, and he can do as many mitzvahs as he wants. The Ribbono Shel Olam will not improve his lot. Why? Because what dominates the actions of the Ribbono Shel Olam is to reveal his unity at the end. And since we're close to the end, mankind must be allowed to pursue as much evil as possible, so that when he reveals itself, it will be in contrast to all that evil that they had, and they realize how much of a nothing they really are. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam does not look at the righteousness of a tzaddik. He cannot. Because the motive or the objective in the period right before the Mashiach is not to reward tzaddikim or to enable them necessarily to be a tzaddik. It's to allow evil to proliferate as much as possible. That's why you see tzaddikim screaming and praying and nothing happens. That's why you see people learning in yeshivas and not being successful. Why it's so difficult to practice many times being a Jew. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam has put himself in the time of Hanuchi Hastir Astai Ponai, where it says in the end of Vom that Ribbono Shel Olam has concealed his face completely, even from the tzaddik. When what dominates today's events is what's called Tigburis Hora, not the tzidkas of a tzaddik. It's a proliferation of evil, and not the righteousness of a tzaddik. The world does not proceed by justice anymore. It does underneath. But what looks externally to our mind is that it's a chaos. It's hefker. The world is chaotic. Whoever wants to do what he wants to do is matzliach, right? And people who are trying to do good are not matzliach. Look how difficult it is for yeshivas to support themselves. And every nashka and shtusim records make hundreds of millions of dollars profit. And a yeshiva cannot get a dime of anything, which is easily illustrated by this yeshiva, Vayisharam. Look how difficult it is for these kind of shurim, and yet if you want to put out a rock and roll record, you'll get $300 million in profit. Or the movies, it's incredible what they make, okay? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam will not regard in this time, it's what's called, the Navi described, as an Eis Ro. The time is bad. The time dictates that the tzaddikim cannot do what they normally could do. Because the objective is different. The objective is that the yichud of the Ribbono Shel Olam, his unity should be revealed, and it must be in a contrast. Of course, once the Mashiach comes, then it's a completely different story. Then everybody will be running after the righteous man, because only through him can they understand the Ribbono Shel Olam. That which it also says in Navi, that everybody will be holding on to the garment of a Jew, and will be begging him to teach him Torah. Then it's the reverse. But until that time, and as we get closer to the advent of the Mashiach, it gets worse. Until it's so worse that it looks like the world is going to be destroyed, and but the destruction of the world does not happen. That's how bad it gets. And again, that's the idea of what happens, why it says in Masechet Sota, all the bad simonim before the Mashiach, that chutz biyazgeh, arrogance will be tremendously all over, and pnei adok, pnei kelev, all the statements that it says in Masechet Sota, indicating what are the times or the simonim, the symbols, the signs of the Mashiach coming, they're all evil, they're all bad. There's no good simonim. Why? Now you understand why. Because Tigburis Hara, the proliferation of evil, must ensue. That is the order of the day. and the righteousness of a tzaddik does not help him at all. But until the Yemos HaMashiach, that is what's going on at the present time. It comes out that a Jew who does a mitzvah today, okay, is both the mitzvah, the reward of the mitzvah is qualitatively far greater and quantitatively far greater than a mitzvah that would have been done, let's say, in the time that the Tannaim were around. It's much greater. So therefore, that itself, and part of the reasoning why is because since it's so difficult to do a mitzvah, of course, because there's so much evil around, the reward is much greater. Lefum tzara agra, according to the tzar, according to the Mesiras Nefesh, according to the amount of sacrifice that you must perform, that is the extent of the reward. So therefore, in today's time, since you have to give much more sacrifice to remain religious and from, therefore the reward obviously is much greater. And also, besides that, other reasons why you get far more reward is because you are contributing to the Gili Chudoi, the comprehension of God's unity throughout the universe, by your being from and still not really being Matzliach. That itself is an... And you will be rewarded for that. La'osad lovoi. To a Shia which you cannot yourself be Masik. In other words, so what's meant... So what we see in the Gemara that Omar Rava says that I would not want to be part of the Chevle Mashiach. What it means is that, of course, that the risk, of course, the reward in the Ikvus of the Mashiach is far greater. However, the risk of falling, of course, is far greater. So, of course, Rava felt that it's not worth it, that he'd rather be in the time of Tannaim and have less risk of falling, or rather have less risk of falling and also less reward, because at least he'll have more Ruchnias. It's still different. You still have more Tzaddikim around. However, we who are in this period of Ikvus Mashiach have to realize that whether we wanted to be here by choice or not, we are here, and what we have to do is to make the situation exactly what it has to be, to bear it, and in that way, not only are you rewarded for the mitzvah, but you're rewarded from the fact that evil will proliferate because of that, and your reward is far greater than it would have been. Now, let's now go into what's called the Derech of the Mashiach. How is he going to do his work?
Soul.
Now, let's see. The derech means the method, the method, the instrument. What is the instrument of the Mashiach? For that, where is the best way to discover that? First, it is important to understand that the first Mashiach that comes is the Mashiach ben Yosef, not the Mashiach ben David. Mashiach ben David comes far after the Mashiach ben Yosef, which I'll describe later on in the scenario of the Mashiach himself. So therefore, what I'm going to talk about now is primarily about the Mashiach ben Yosef, the Messiah, the son of Yosef, okay? And I'm going to be talking about his derech, his method that's going, he's going to use in order to return the Jews to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then after, I'll be talking about where do we see that as a preparation in history. These are very important concepts. Briefly, the Mashiach ben Yosef comes first. The Mashiach ben David comes second. He then completes the task of bringing the world into the Messianic age. And in the Messianic age itself, both Mashiachim are there. And the Messianic age begins after the Mashiach ben Yosef has done his job and after the Mashiach ben David has done his job. Then the Messianic age begins. So therefore, there's what's called the Ikvus of the Mashiach, which is before the advent of the Mashiach, the Aschalta de Geula, which means the beginning of redemption, which includes when he's born, Mashiach ben Yosef coming, Mashiach ben David coming, and then there's the Yemos HaMashiach, which is the period after they've both done their jobs, now is the Messianic age, for however long it continues, until the 6,000th year, then the world is destroyed. But I'll explain that much more in detail later on. Let me now go into the Derech of the Mashiach. Now, where do we find the Derech of the Mashiach? So if we look, let's take a look at where does it talk about Yosef, right? If we take a look at the end of Dvarim, it talks when Moshe Rabbeinu is giving a bracha, a blessing for each of the Shvatim tribes, right? He talks about Yosef. And toward the end of the blessing, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm talking about the end of Dvarim. He talks about Yosef and he says, Bechor Shiroi, the firstborn of his ox, Hodoloi, he has beauty. Vekani Re'im Karnov, the horns of the Re'im, which is an animal, Karnov, are his horns. Bohem Amim Yenaga. With these horns, he will gore the nations. Who is he referring to? He's referring to the Mashiach ben Yosef. And from that pasuk, it reveals to us exactly how the Mashiach is going to do that. Now, it says again, that pasuk. Now, what does that pasuk mean? It says, Bechor Sherei, the firstborn of his ox. Who is his ox? Who is God's ox? Klai Yisrael. Who is the firstborn? Mashiach. Because he is the only one, of course, again, who was never nivgam by the chet, who is never damaged by the chet of Adam Rishon. Therefore, he's always considered the firstborn in that sense. And also, it's upon him the task, just like it was going to be on the firstborn, to do the avodah, to redeem Klal Yisrael. Now, what about this firstborn? Hodoloi, beauty is his. What kind of beauty? It says, V'kani re'im karnov. The horns of a re'im are his horns. Now, what is a re'im? A re'im is an animal. It's probably where the word ram comes from. It's basically a ram, of the goat family. Now, the horns of an ox are very short and stubby, but they're immensely powerful because you have the entire shoulders of the ox behind it. The thrust of the ox is very powerful. The horns of a goat are beautiful, the way they twist and wind. You ever see a shofar? They're extremely elegant and beautiful. But they're not as strong as the ox because what do you have? You only have the shoulders of a goat. So therefore, the horns of the ox has power, tremendous strength, and the horns of the ram, the ra'im, has beauty. Okay? So it says that the Mashiach, his horns, he is an ox. Because it's Bechor Sherei, right? But his horns are beautiful. So he's got both in those horns, right? That's the metaphor. He's got tremendous strength and beauty. Okay? Now the question, of course, is what are the horns? And with those horns, he's going to gore the nations. What is that? That is a metaphor. What is it really referring to? Ask yourself, what are the horns of an ox? Where do they emanate from? They emanate from his head, correct? What are the horns used for in an ox? They're weapons, right? They're defense, weapons. That's the exact metaphor for the Mashiach ben Yosef. What is the products of his head? Chochmah. What emanates in the shaw? What emanates from the head? The horns. So the metaphor in the Mashiach is the wisdom that emanates from his head. And just like the ox uses that which emanates from his head, the horns, as weapons, the Mashiach ben Yosef uses the wisdom that emanates from his head as the weapons to conquer the world. And Bohem Amim Yenagah, he will destroy the nations. He will gore the nations with those horns, with those that chokmah. So we see that that's the metaphor, that the instrument, the method that the Mashiach will use to redeem Klal Yisrael, to do what he has to do, is chokmah, emes, truth, incredible wisdom. Far more than has ever been seen before. That's how he's going to turn people around. The chokmah that he will give him is so great that it will be able to turn people around. Now, that chokmah is tiferes, it's called beauty. Because it says hodoloi, beauty. And we'll understand what does it mean when chokmah is beautiful. What does that mean? But right now we've reached a certain understanding. We see that the weapons of the Mashiach is that which emanates from his head. That is his chokmah, his intellect. Just like the metaphor in the Torah says, the horns that emanate from the head of the ox is also his weapons. And with these weapons, that is how he will overcome and vanquish the nations. Now, interestingly enough, in this week's Parsha, you always wonder if the Parsha has a relevance. If you look, it says it's Shlach. This week's Parsha is Shlach, Lechor, right? Parsha Shlach, where it says, who are the Nesiim, who are the people that Moshe Rabbeinu sent to Eretz Israel? So it says, Lebnei Yisachar, to the Shevet of Yisachar, right? To the tribe of Yisachar, who was it? Yigal ben Yosef. Yigal ben Yosef. Ben Yosef, what it means, Yigal, Yud Gimel Aleph Lamed, means he shall redeem Ben Yosef. Ben Yosef shall redeem. That's what Yigal Ben Yosef means. And who is it referring to? The tribe of who? Of Yisachar. What was Yisachar's famous place in Klal Yisrael? He is the one who was Yisachar's Zvulun. Yisachar learned Torah all day. and Zvulun held him out. So in other words, it comes out that Ben Yosef will redeem Klai Yisrael, right, with the attribute of Yisachar, which is what? Chochmas HaTorah, wisdom. Just to indicate how it's tied in as a remez. It's only a remez, it's not pshat, believe me. It's a remez how that is tied in, how we can see it even in today's parsha. Now, let us go further. We've now reached the conclusion, we see that the way the Mashiach Ben Yosef will do his avodah, his job, is through Chochmah. And that's why he's called the Kanei Re'im. The Kanei Re'im refers to the Mashiach Ben Yosef. That's his title. Now, where we see this in the Navi, a further corroboration. In the Navi in Yeshaya, which is very famous, Nun Beis, at the end of Yeshaya, Perek Nun Beis, 52, it says a very famous pasuk. And then in 53 is even more famous, and the Goyim have tried to plagiarize that in their own religion, which I'll talk about later. But in any case, in Yeshaya Nun Beis at the end, it says, Hine, behold, Yaskil Avdi, my servant shall become exceedingly wise. Yaskil, Haskolah, wisdom, enlightenment. My servant shall become exceedingly wise. Yoram, he shall become great, Veniso, and wax very much, the Govami Oid. And he shall become exceedingly great. That pasuk uses three lishonos, three expressions of becoming greater. In other words, it says that, behold, my servant will become wise. And it says, v'yorum v'nisa v'gova. Three expressions which means that he will become, his haskalah, his enlightenment, his wisdom will become incredibly great. Now, just to show, now, who is that pasuk talking about? Who is, by my servant shall become wise? That is referring to the Mashiach, because the Targum right next to it says Avdi Mashicho, my servant the Mashiach. There are Mephoshim that learn that this Pasuk is referring to Klai Yisrael, because Avdi, who is the servant of the Rebbeinu Shlom? The answer of course is Klai Yisrael. But Api Kabbalah, and even the Targum himself, learns that who is Avdi, who is the one that should become exceedingly wise? That is the Mashiach. And there it says that he shall become wise. How wise? So Chazal darshan that the first lashon, yoram, the first expression of becoming growing, is that he will be greater in wisdom than Avraham Avinu. V'niso, he will be greater in wisdom than Moshe Rabbeinu. And v'gova mi'oid, he will be greater in wisdom than the Malchei Asharis, the angels, the ministering angels of the Rebbeinu Shlom. That is how great the Mashiach will be in wisdom. Okay? And we notice, there are many things we notice from this pasuk, but so far we notice that wisdom, chokhmah, is to what the Mashiach is going to have, and it will be so great that it will be greater than the malachim, the angels themselves. And that is how he will do his avodah. Now, there's a very beautiful medrash that talks about in the Yalkut. And it says over there that when the Rebbeinu Shlom created the Or Rishon, that first light, remember the Rebbeinu Shlom, it says, Yehi Or, God said, let there be light? It says that the Rebbeinu Shlom hid that light. God, Yehi Or, and then he took that light and he hid it, and he put the light of the sun and the moon and the stars instead. So it says in the Medrash in Yalkut, which happens to be in Yeshaya, that what the Rebbeinu Shlom did is he hid that light, and he looks forward to the day of the Mashiach and his generation, when that light will be revealed. Then the Satan saw the Rebbeinu Shlom hiding it, so he asked him, what are you hiding? This is what the Medrash says. So the Rebbeinu Shlom said to the Satan, I am hiding that which will, in the end of time, the Asad Lover, in the future, destroy you and all your hosts. So the Satan was very interested in seeing what in the world could destroy him and his hosts. So he said to the Rebbeinu Shlom, show me that. So the Rebbeinu Shlom showed him that light. And when the Satan saw it, it says, V'nizdazo, and he shook all over, because he knew that this would destroy him and his entire host. Now, we have to understand several questions. First of all, what I thought that what the Mashiach will have in that generation will be Chochmah, wisdom. What is this all Rishon, this first light? It seems to be two different kinds of things. The all Rishon, that first light, which God hid and then substituted with the light of the sun and the moon and the stars. And before we seem to say that what the Mashiach will use is not that all reason to destroy the Sitra Achron to bring truth back to the world, but Chochmah. So the question, of course, is what's going on? Is it Chochmah? Is it all reason? What is it? The second question is that if it is the Orishin, what is the Orishin? What is that, a light? What exactly is that Orishin referring to? The third question is, it says in the Pasuk, Vahi era vahi voke yom echad, and there was evening and morning one day. The second day it says, Vahi era vahi voke yom sheni. So in the first time it says, use the word echad, one day. The second day it used the second day, the third day, the fourth day. Why does it say and there was evening and morning one day? It should say the first day, like it says the second day, third day, and fourth day. It should say Yom Rishon, not Yom Echad, one day. It should say the first day, since we are now counting the days. And the last kasha I'll ask is that Chazal say that with the light, that origin, that light enabled one to see from the beginning of the universe to its end. Mitchilas oilam at seifa oilam. That with that light you could see from one end of the universe to the other end of the universe. What does that mean? What is it, a light that can bend around corners so therefore you can see all around the different places of the universe? What exactly is meant by Chazal in this medrash? In order to understand it, we have to understand that the idea or is a metaphor. When we say or is a metaphor for Chochmah, wisdom, that's what or is. When I say to you, do you see the light? What am I referring to? I don't mean the light. Do you understand the truth? Light is used as a symbol for truth because with light I can see reality. When it's pitch black in the room, I can't see anything. So when there's light in the room, I could see reality. So when I say to you, do you see the light? I mean, do you see what light enables you to see, which is reality, which is truth. So therefore, or is really a metaphor or a symbol for Chochmah, truth, wisdom. Now, if that's the case, so obviously that the Orishin that is referred to in that Pasuk is not light, it's wisdom. What the Ribbono Shel hid from the universe is a certain perception of reality, a certain wisdom, which only in the Yemos HaMashiach will we have it. We won't have it until then. So that's what it means that the Ribbono Shel Olam hid that light. He didn't hide light waves. He hid what is known as the Chochmah, as a tremendous Chochmah. That's what he hid. So therefore, when I ask the question, what's the difference between the Or Rishon, right? The Or Rishon and Chochmah, which one is the Mashiach going to use? The answer, of course, is both, because they mean the same thing. The Mashiach's weapon, his instrument, is Chochmah, and that is exactly what the Orishin is, the first light. It's a certain perception or comprehension of the universe which was known in the first day. That's what it means. Now, the question we can ask, okay, we understand that his instrument is Chochmah, and we understand that it's the term that's used to describe that Chochmah is the Orishin. That's what it's called. What is that Chochmah? What exactly is the Chochmah that the Mashiach will use as his instrument to change the universe? The answer to that, of course, is we always must look back in the Torah. And if you ask the question, where is the answer in the Torah to what is the Orishin, where must the answer lie? In that Pasuk itself, the Ribbono Shel Olam is Megala, what that Orishin is. And the answer to that lies in Yom Echad, the term Yom Echad. Chazal asked the question of why does it say Yom Echad, one day, it should say the first, second, and so on. Chazal answered the reason why it says one day is because the Ribbono Shel Olam indicated that on that day he was the only living being. Malachim were created on the second day. So therefore on the first day it was Yom Echad, Yom Shel Echad, the day of one. That's what it was. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam indicates that there was nothing besides him that was living on the first day. Malachim were created on the second day. So therefore, Yom Echad means day of one, the day of the one. However, if we look into that Chazal, or we look into the idea of Yom Echad, we can see it in a different light. It doesn't only mean Yom Echad, that on that day there was nobody else but the Ribbono Shel Olam. What it means is that even in that day, had there been everything else, it still would not have made a difference, because there would not have been any concealment between the reality and the Ribbono Shel Olam as its source. You would have seen the reality and the Ribbono Shel Olam in a direct connection. There would be no difference. In other words, it would be the day of one. In other words, if you were living on that first day, you would see how all phenomena is completely related right back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You would see a thing, phenomena, right back to its source, its root. So therefore, it again is the day of one. Because it's a day when you recognize that there is only one thing, and all these different things are merely manifestations of the Ribbono Shel Olam in different ways. So therefore, Yom Echod itself tells you that on that day when the All Rishon functioned, what it was that had you been there, you could see the perception that the Ribbono Shel Olam is the root, the source of every entity that existed, and that every entity was merely a manifestation somehow of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it is Yom Echod. It's a day of one. It's a day when even though I see many different phenomena, many different aspects of reality, I'm not fooled into thinking that they're all different than the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. They're all part of him. I see everything as a chelik l'kai. That's what Yom Echod really means. Therefore, with that we now understand what All Rishon is. All Rishon, the first light, is the chokhmah that was given on that first day, where nothing was concealed. When we saw that, when a person could see that everything is related to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that also is indicated in the word All Rishon. It's not the first light, it's all, it's the light of the Rishon, of the first being, which is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Look at it that way. Like it's not Yom Echod one day, it's the day of one. Not Yom Rishon means the first, All Rishon, the first light. It's all the light of the Rishon, of the first cause, which is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Or again is a symbol for Chochmah. So in other words, it comes out that the All which was revealed on that day, the wisdom or the perception of reality that a person would have had he been created on that day, he would see all entities as emanating from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So in his mind, he would see the Yichud of the Ribbono Shel Olam completely. That's Yom Echod, the day of one. On that day, he would see Yichudoy. It was on the second day that Yichud was hidden already. That already, if you were born on the second day, you would not see the Ribbono Shel Olam as the root of all. It was already hidden. It was already a day of Yom Sheni, a day where you have second entities already, where it's not obvious that all entities emanate from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore, this is the what is meant. So therefore, in order to the questions that I asked, why is it called Yom Echod? The day it's not one day. It's a day of one, which indicates that the Ribbono Shel Olam, in that time, we could see his unity completely through the Bria, the universe. And everything you could see manifested as merely somehow an expression or manifestation of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. There was no Hester. There was no concealment of Yehudai. That is the All Rishon. The second question I ask, is it Chochmah All Rishon? The answer, of course, is All Rishon and Chochmah the same thing. All Rishon, of course, is merely a simile, a metaphor, for Chochmah. And it's, of course, as I mentioned, it is the light of the first, of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The third question I ask, what is the All Rishon? Well, now you understand. The Pasuk itself tells you what the All Rishon. The answer is Yom Echod. The ability to see the Ribbono Shel Olam completely throughout the Bria. And the last question I ask was that it says that you could see one end of the universe to the other end. Now you understand what it means. It doesn't mean that you could see around corners. It means that if you have the knowledge, or if you perceive reality, where the root of all reality is obvious even in the external manifestations of phenomena, so obviously you could see from the beginning, which is the outward manifestation, completely to the end, which is its root. That's what's meant. You could see all phenomena down to its ultimate causes, which is the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is the hasaga that a person would have at that time, first day. The Ribbono Shel Olam hid that, and he gave it to the Mashiach, to Megala, in Yemos HaMashiach. That is what the Mashiach is going to Megala. His weapon is Chochmah, and what is the nature of that Chochmah? The nature of that Chochmah is the complete complete understanding of the entire universe as nothing more than the manifestation of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, then you will realize that it's only Yichud Mitzi'usoi and Yichud Shlitosoi, that only the Ribbono Shel Olam is the only one that exists, and his is the only power that is. Because you will see the manifestations, and you will see its ultimate reasons or causes, right down to the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That's how the Mashiach will do it, and that is why what he will do is called being Megal the Orishin, because that's what it's all about. His Chochmah is the Orishin, and the nature of that Orishin, of course, is the Yim Echor. It will again go back to the original first day of creation, when had you been there, you would see the Ribbono Shel Olam completely throughout creation.